This is Ed Storms. I'm a researcher in cold fusion, and I'm participating in an interview with 21st Century Radio and Bob Hieronymus.
Well, Dr. Edgar Storms, you know, there's another one of those topics that 20th century science killed, or at least they thought they killed it. It's back and strong. The rest of the world has taken over, and of course, General Motors has taken over here. So, well, once again, Maryland's gubernatorial and local elections were examples of what the Sun Papers has referred to as gutter politics. On behalf of Bob Ehrlich's campaign, which he still refuses to address. And that's just one reason why we asked Brother Joe Honick to join us for the remainder of tonight's show. Joe Honick is the founder of the consulting firm GMA International Limited, which specializes in national and international politics, business, and economics, particularly with interests in China. In Japan, of course, in Balmer, we call it China, but we do pronounce Japan, Japan. Here in Baltimore. His columns appear in a variety of magazines, newsletters, online venues, as well as on our website. But before, Joe, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, Joe, but before we address the election day and its issues, you sent me a story which I wish I would have been able to put into the hands of my father-in-law right away. What's your reaction to the apparently recent revelations in the New York Times front page about how we hushed up and helped a lot of Nazis get into the United States?
I wish I could say this was something new.
It's not.
Anybody who's been covering these affairs wonders, for example, we know there was a communist blacklist, but we don't know why there was never a Nazi blacklist.
That's right.
And the reason may be pretty simple. Because a lot of American industry was tied up in supporting Nazis, the Ford Corporation, GM, AT&T, Tom Watson of IBM. These are old stories that most people have had hushed up with the help of some darn good public relations, I might add. And so when I saw that story about U.S. being a haven, I was not surprised. Some time back on a program that we had with you, I mentioned to you something called Operation Paperclip.
Yes, sir.
And I urged people to take a look at that without Joe Honick making the case. But we helped a lot of people from the Nazis get into this country, some because the CIA paid for intelligence or so-called intelligence activities, like General Galen, who became a good consultant.
Yeah,
we even made, through the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we made Wernher von Braun a great living American because he got us into space, but he was also a full bird colonel in the very hated Waffen-SS in Nazi Germany. And these are important things that people want to avoid, and who wants to go back anymore in the United States to the old days?
Well, yeah, it's understandable, but if you don't know your history, it's going to be very hard for you to see where you are today.
Well, how many people say if you bring something like this to say, well, that's before my time?
Well,
and of course, yeah, but I ask him, did you ever hear of Beethoven and George Washington?
No, never heard of them. And,
right.
And I guess that's the reason why.
It is a very dangerous situation that we're very shallow in our schools, in our public life, and so forth, about the totality of history. And then what a lot of people here got involved with, both before World War II, because they wanted us to be isolationist and they totally ignore what was going on in Europe. And, you know, just don't look there. We have no business there. Pat Buchanan is one of the folks who thinks we never should have even been involved in World War II. But then, of course, they bombed us in Japan, and he said some of those folks said it was our fault. What can I tell you? This is what gets projected.
Well, I mean, as other Pap, you can.
One of the wonders that's available in a democracy like ours is a thing called Google. And people who want to find things that are contradictory, comparative, and so on, and do some time on Google and just ask a question about who in American industry was involved. And old man George H.W. Bush's father was very much a helpful person to Hitler. That doesn't mean George Bush himself was, but the old man, the family back there, was part of an interesting cabal from GM, DuPont, and so on, who thought Hitler was a pretty good guy because, frankly, he did provide an awful lot of business manufacturing trucks, tanks, and so forth for the German army.
Well, I guess if it sells wartime supplies, then it's got to be great. You know, but you still have that same kind of problem with certain religious fundamentalists who especially Christian fundamentalists that I've worked with, talked with for a period of 40 years in regards to that, because they point to the philosophy of National Socialism and Hitler in particular as being so successful that they have taught time and time again that he was someone to emulate. Now, this...
Well, they use that with the idea that Hitler said he was going to fight off communism. Well, Stalinist communism was something to be... Stalin, you know, was just the flip of the coin of Hitler. Both of them managed to kill millions of people. But Hitler's approach was hardly anything that resembled what we like to think our founders put together about 300 years ago. But you're right. Some people say, well, he was successful. Well, I can't imagine the United States of America, the country that helped my immigrant parents settle here, and that they and I, in 14 years of military service, figured this was a great opportunity. I can't imagine people who support what we're supposed to be to have a department dedicated to the total demolition of the Jewish people.
Indeed.
Or any religious group. But that's what Hitler had, and he had some pretty high-powered people doing it.
Yeah, I think you forgot to mention General Electric involved in that.
I forgot to mention General Electric.
Yeah. One of the a mega polluter of planet Earth who owns NBC. And, you know, I think that kind of conflict, and of course NBC was, General Electric was the employer of Ronald Reagan, who allowed that to happen in 1986. That's an important part of history as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's history, but I think what we've seen in the recent election is, you know, bringing things up to date where nobody can say that was before my time brings us to a point that's really, really very important. And I hope we can get a chance to address.
Well, I think we should address your commentary, The Arrogance of Victory Minus the Pride, which I thought was really powerful stuff.
Well, that's gotten some interesting national attention, frankly. And, you know, political campaigns, particularly national political campaigns, and especially when there's all kinds of stuff going on about who likes the president and power and so forth, that can get to be pretty hateful during a campaign, and in a way, I accept that, understand that. It's pretty harsh stuff. As Harry Truman used to say, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. However, what was always significant in the United States of America, that when all the hateful stuff was over, but we announced the vote and who won and who lost, both sides came together to say, we work for one group, and that's called the American people. And we're here to help rebuild or advance. That has not happened. Both Senator McConnell, who wants to be a major factor in the Senate, even though he's got not the majority yet, but he wants it, his total commitment in public was, frankly, the destruction of the Obama administration. I cannot tell you whether we all like Mr. Obama or not, but I remember the Bush people at the beginning of George W.'s administration, when the Democrats went after him, the Republicans were right out there saying, we only have one president at a time, and that's a correct statement.
That's right.
When you attack the presidency, not the policy, but the presidency itself, you're attacking the constitutionally elected office.
Yes.
That is, we used to have a word for that called unpatriotic. And then Mr. Boehner, who is a bright, well-spoken gentleman, and will be the Speaker of the House, no doubt, when he was finally asked the question about what do we do about the war in Afghanistan, could only say, well, we have to, quote, succeed, close quote, but that doesn't necessarily mean victory. And if you'll tell me what that means or what would have happened if a Democrat had said that, I don't know. But the point is, neither party, and certainly not the victorious party, had one thing to say about how we stop this madness in Afghanistan, where even the president of that country said, we'd rather you not fight so hard.
Well, what do you think about the pledge to America of the Republican campaign?
Well, I got to tell you, there is a brilliant wasted talent on the Republican side whose name is Newt Gingrich. He happens to be a brilliant guy. He's the last thing from a dummy. And he is a wasted talent because he's got more baggage than Louis Vuitton in his history with his staff, the whole bit. So many years ago, he also came up with the Contract for America, a damn fine marketing, political marketing program. We never figured out what it meant, but it was excellent in getting people elected. And so now he's come up with a pledge to America. Actually, by the way, some of us refer to the Contract for America as the Contract on America. So now they've come up with the Pledge to America, and for all the super patriots who don't necessarily care for all the rest of the people, but the point is, they didn't know what that meant. So, there were implications, and people drew inferences for what it meant. And they finally had to admit, we now have to have a meeting to figure out the details of what we meant by the Pledge to America. I pledge to America every time I go to a football game and sing the national anthem and do all those things. Now, what are they talking about as a pledge to America? What are they going to do to stop the drain of $2 trillion from American taxpayers for the war that even Boehner says we don't have to win?
Mm-hmm. What about the media in regards to this?
The media, you know, I'm a media person. I created the Journalism Society at the Maryland University. I have been a reporter and editor and counselor for years. And I think the media lambs have been as deficient and suppressive as they could possibly be. You know, we have people like Beck and Limbaugh and some of these other folks who go after what they like to call the left-wing media. But, hell, the right-wing media, through Mr. Murdoch, have suppressed any real major discussion. I know which station I'm on, so I hope I don't get thrown off.
Well, we're fair and balanced. Hey, wait a second, Joe. We're fair and balanced. So we don't have to. We're not supposed to ever worry about that. If we are fair and balanced, we should be allowed to talk about the other side. Doesn't that seem reasonable?
Well, of course, I'm an American and I love the First Amendment. Good. The First Amendment guarantees several things: freedom of speech and the press, and the right to make a damn fool of yourself if you wish.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people have, in the sense that they frustrated open discussion about these wars. And I'll get to Charlie Rangel in a second if we have time.
Well, certainly.
Which is very interesting. But I haven't seen any of them worry about the fact that daily, and I get the daily Department of Defense contract awards, we daily award close to $1 billion in contracts. And I guarantee you the lobbyists for the major defense contractors are not unhappy that the conflicts continue. And they got to keep making stuff that goes to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I once wrote an article that Afghanistan is a wonderful war for defense contractors.
Oh, it is. It's terrific.
And I hate the idea of young men and women being shot at and killed. But what I also don't like is that not one of these people in the Republican Party and maybe the Democratic Party want to go along with the idea that if you have a war, why can't all young people and all people be responsible for participating in it?
Well, you know why they wouldn't want that, don't you?
Well, yes, I do, and I also know which organizations persuaded Richard Nixon to sign the All-Volunteer Armed Forces Act, and that was mostly the Cato Institute and the American Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yes, of course.
So-called libertarian groups. But I don't understand how you can be for a war, but only for a bunch of hired mercenaries to fight it.
Well, you don't
either
think
we have a war that we should... Pardon me?
I was going to say, you don't think that we're going to stay in Afghanistan forever and ever because of their $1 trillion worth of gems and other substances in their soil?
Listen, a part of some of the contracts that I've seen awarded, there is one particular contract that relates to the 4-year withdrawal that Obama talked about the other day that is very significant. There is a contract that was left for somewhere around $15 billion to two corporations as the lead contractors to build 74 new bases in Afghanistan over the next 5 years. Now, that hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, and you won't find it in the Wall Street Journal too much, but you can Google it up and find out. DynCorp, D-Y-N-C-O-R-P, and one other, I can't remember the other one, have got the major share of that contract. Now, what are we doing building all these new bases in Afghanistan if we're not going to hang around for a while? On the other hand, what do we do with the president of a country we're risking our men and women for who says, would you just tone back all that business and don't make so much battle?
Yeah, that's right.
There is a vast gap of credibility here, and none of the media are dealing with these issues in any major shape. And that is, it embarrasses me as a media person, but I don't understand why it's not brought up more by the people who want fair and balanced information to the people of America.
Well, that's something maybe we'll talk about a little bit more when we get back after this break, but I think we need to get to Charlie Rangel soon. That was an interesting, that was a fascinating situation he found himself in. And it's always amazing to me that some of the things that these guys do that are wrong, we only catch them on the smallest things. And I think that's what's happened again here. Of course, our guest is Joe Honig, veteran journalist with a seasoned perspective on today's headlines. I have to admit that he is a mentor of mine. I have an enormously high regard for his thinking process and his love for this country. You can contact him at Joe Honig. Honig, that is. H-O-N-I-C-K. Joe Honig at gmail.com. Next week on 21st Century Radio, a legend in his lifetime has returned to the field. Dr. Jacques Vallée joins us to discuss wonders in the sky, unexplained aerial objects from antiquity to modern times. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, this is Hank Williams III, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Hieronymus. Stay tuned.
Oh, Hank Williams III. Boy, every time I think of his granddad, just incredible guy, Hank Williams. All right, our guest is another incredible guy, Joe Honig. And, of course, he's a veteran journalist with a seasoned perspective, and I need seasoning. I really do, because I can get enraged by some of the stuff that we cover. The House Ethics Committee recommended this week that the Congressman Charlie Rangel be censured by the full House of Representatives for ethical misconduct, and this ends a 2-year investigation into the Harlem Democrats' finances. What's your perspective on this, Joe?
Well, first of all, I can't tell you that Charlie Rangel's an angel and we're going to put a halo around his head. You know, when you've been in Congress for a long time or in any power position, sometimes the power becomes a little intoxicating. And Charlie apparently did some things that evidence showed he had done. Interestingly enough, when the chief counsel for the ethics committee was asked, did Mr. Rangel do anything meant to enrich himself? And the answer was no. That doesn't make him right for doing what he did. But let me pose four questions to you. One, how come Rangel was suddenly swooped down at this particular time by the congressional power structure, regardless, after all these years? And what impact did his demand for a reinstatement of the draft, because in his words, the whole nation is at war, why did that cause him a problem?
Oh.
Who or what CLAC actually organized the effort to start the charges rolling? As they say biblically, who cast the first stone? But the real question right now is, how many other members of Congress, regardless of party, are checking all conceivable files and losing lots of sleep as a result of Charlie's trial? Now, I can't make him out to be an angel, and he's probably, you know, paying, but he paid in a way that was as close to a public stoning as you can get by having to stand up in the House of Representatives and hear the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, read out the charges, read out the findings, and read out the censure of a man in front of all his colleagues in the Congress. Now, it's interesting. Had he done something really to the extreme, he might have gotten the Tom DeLay treatment. And Tom DeLay has got his own legal problems, as you know. And I don't mention that just because he's a Republican. There are Democrats doing some silly things as well.
Certainly are.
But the real situation here is, how come now, after 40 years or so, and why did it hit him so hard when he suggested to the world that if we really got a war that's legit, why don't we get everybody into it?
Mm-hmm.
And who cast the first stone? These are questions that I have not seen raised, answered, examined, or anything else, and it kind of smells. Worse, the media did not do its job on this one either. I'm really embarrassed by the media performance in recent weeks. And by the way, Charlie got reelected by an overwhelming majority again, and some would say, well, that's a racial reality, but he has the right to come into the Congress and go back to work after being spanked hard and embarrassed like crazy. But they did not say he performed criminal acts or somebody's coming to indict him and send him to jail.
Whoa,
boy. We got a real mishmash here.
Yes, indeed. And you're looking into this. Who did throw the first stone? Have you gotten into
I am indeed looking into it. Not because there may not have been a pebble to be tossed. I just wonder why more people who wanted to make the accusations just don't go public if they believe they're right. You know, say, how many letters to the editor you sometimes see where somebody uses a pseudonym so we don't have to know who they are while they cast the rocks at people?
Yeah, especially.
And in America, we like to know who's making accusations.
Well, you know, these kind of things, it's one of the reasons why I thought it was so important many months ago when we first met to join us, because I do not have the time or ability to look into all of these other areas, which I believe may be more important than the kind of shows that we're doing in the first place, because we're watching, in many instances, I'm sorry to see our nation, especially within the media, become so distracted by just being entertained and how important that kind of stuff is. But that's another topic altogether. We got a few minutes left. These recent midterm elections, what's your overall reaction to that entire campaign?
My overall reaction is this was perhaps the most undignified, embarrassing campaign I have seen in many years. Again, I say, it's not as if the battles aren't supposed to be tough during the campaigns, but accusing a president of being a Marxist, communist, and all any president. I would never have defended anybody on the left accusing Bush of being a Nazi or anything. There are many things I criticized about Bush, and legitimately, there are some things I don't agree with Obama about. But when you take the presidency and try to convert it into a criminal location, you have a problem that goes beyond the dignity of what the Constitution had in mind, even in the First Amendment. Now, as I said before, ordinarily, as tough and rough and tumble as a campaign can be, and you expect it, and Mr. Truman, my favorite, actually, said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, so it's going to be tough stuff. Mm-hmm. But when it's finished, both Democrats and Republicans and the decaffeinated Tea Party people, or whoever they are, all have to remember who they work for. Mm-hmm. And that's the American people and not their parties. And when Senator O'Donnell committed himself to the deconstruction of a president, he performed a shameful, shameful act. When Mr. Boehner couldn't come up with something more effective about wars, and neither one of them could talk to us now, having been so victorious and claiming the mandate of the American people, had much to say about conflicts that seem to have no end and are the other burdens on our children and grandchildren, at right now adding up to $2 trillion and lots of lost lives. So my answer is that the media and the political parties conduct themselves shamefully in this last election, and the impact is going to be with us for a long time, if anybody cares.
Well, obviously you care, I care, and I hope others within the media care, and I hope Americans care, because you've got the same kind of a problem. I was going to get into the situation in regards to, I look at the American flag as not a president. That the name of a person, president, and that's the reason why many times I had to fight with individuals to keep them from burning the American flag, even though I didn't necessarily agree with anything that Bush had to say, or any of the Bushes or the Reagans or whatever. It was our country, not the president.
That's right.
Joe, that's right. Thank you for joining us. We'll be looking forward to your being with us again in about 4 or 5 more weeks.
I wish we had more time tonight.
So do I, especially in these areas.
Thank you, Bob, and thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye. Well, we'll see you next week on 21st Century Radio with Dr. Jacques Vallée, my very favorite UFO researcher.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore, and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm...